Thank you, Simon, and thank you for all those who have taken part this morning. Just a little concerned as I come before you because I'm one of those bounties that are left in the chocolate bar. What do you call those? Tin. Used to be a tin, didn't it? Yeah. So I was a bit worried about all you other people that were thinking, well, I like the bounties. Or what was the other one you leave behind, Tom? Milky Way. I like the Milky Ways as well. I don't really like Maltesers. It's a choice. Actually, thank you for that, Tom, because it kind of set us up well, because we've been looking at these journeys through the nativity story, the birth narrative in Matthew and in Luke particularly, but we're going to be in Matthew today. Thinking about the journey of Joseph. Actually, that was Matthew. Thinking of the journey of the shepherds. Thinking of the wise men, or the magi, as we're going to call them, through this sermon. And actually, you're absolutely right. Each and every one of them is different. Completely different. You know, a young couple, Joseph and Mary. Mary probably 14, 15 maybe at the oldest. Joseph may early 20s perhaps. Some think he may be a bit older. Shepherds, kind of rough diamonds on the hillside, looking after their sheep. And then we get to these magi, who are completely different characters. Have nothing to do with sheep, nothing to do with Mary and Joseph. Not even Jewish people. A very different flavour of chocolate, I guess you may describe them, or Tom might describe them as. So I want us to think about these people as we finish off this series together, although we will continue talking about journeys, or the journey all the way up to Christmas, as well as we complete our kind of theme for Christmas that has been going on. And I want to share just four things about these characters. I'm not going to go into the detail, but four things about these characters that may help us as we journey in our own faith, particularly to this Christmas, but also in our faith of giving glory to Jesus. And the first thing I want to say is that it's fair to say that these people, these magi, are mysterious strangers. Mysterious strangers. There's been huge speculation. In fact, I got a whole load of books that kind of deal with issues around Christmas, but particularly, who are these people? Where did they come from? Why did they come? Who were they? Were they kings? Were they wise men? What were they? Massive speculation. Did they come from Persia? Did they come from Babylon? Did they come from Arabia? Did they even come from India, as some have suggested? There's very little, actually, that we know about these people. All we do know is that they are magi. We don't know that they are wise. In fact, later I shall suggest maybe they weren't so wise. We don't even know if they were wise men. All we know is that they were magi. They were certainly not kings. We could cut that one out completely. So the whole idea of them being kings with crowns on their heads is completely wrong. The only thing we probably can assume or work through is that somehow they had some connection with, probably beginning with Daniel's influence in the place of Babylonia and then into the Persian nation. That took over from Babylonia. It seems that these are people probably of intellect. The magi of the kind of Babylonian times, or the magicians, as it's called in Daniel, if you look up in Daniel 2, verses 2, it mentions the magicians. He actually uses the word the magi. These are people that are advisors. These are intellectual people. They are studying ancient documents. They may be sorcerers. They certainly were studying the stars, because often they studied the stars to understand the times that they were facing. They were probably the intellects, the scientists, although I use that word very carefully, not really scientists as we know them, but scientists of their time. And they were influential people in the courts and the king as they advised him of what direction to go in. And actually, part of what they did was to interpret dreams. And do you remember the time in Daniel's time when the king had a dream and he wanted an interpretation of the dream? And so he went to his advisors and all these magi and magicians and sorcerers, and he said to them, I want you to tell me what my dream meant. And they said to him, well, tell us the dream. He said, no, I'm not going to tell you the dream. You need to tell me the dream, and then tell me what it means. And of course, there was only one man in the kingdom then who knelt before God, and God revealed the dream to him, and that was Daniel. So there may be some kind of connection back, but this is all quite mysterious, unsure, uncertain kind of information. What can we be sure of? They were foreigners. They were foreigners. They were strangers. They were Gentiles. If a Jewish person had made up this story of the Christmas narrative, they would not have included the wise men, the magi, because they are outside of Israel. They are outside of the Jewish family. They are not part of what God is doing in the kingdom of the Jews. You wouldn't include them in, and yet they are included in. These mysterious strangers that travel to Israel shouldn't have been included, and yet they are. And I ask the question, why were they included? And I come to this conclusion that this is part of what God is doing, to say to each and every one of us that every stranger is welcome at the place of Jesus. Every stranger is welcome, beginning with the Gentiles, beginning with the foreigners, beginning with people of other nations. And in fact, actually, I think as we see, and of course, they don't come to the manger and the stable and all that kind of thing, but as they bow before the toddler Jesus, probably, who's probably just about on his feet, as they bow before this tiny child, what we begin to see is the fulfillment of all times, when people of all nations, all languages, all strangers, all foreigners will bow before Jesus as Lord of Lords and King of Kings. Do you ever feel like you're a stranger? Do you ever feel you're a little bit kind of on the edge? Perhaps speaking a different language, not actually kind of literally, but kind of metaphorically to everyone else. Not actually feel that you're there in the bubble. Well, I want you to hear that God includes you in. He says, come. Come from your distance. Come from the far-off land that you might be, and come to the feet of Jesus, because at that place you're welcome. And if there's anyone here today, this Christmas time, who feels they're on the edge, look to the Magi. They were on the edge, and yet God led them to the place of Jesus. Second thing I want to say is that these people were seekers of truth. The nature of the Magi, it seems, as we can understand them, is that they were people that studied the times and tried to understand the future. They probably were reliant on ancient prophecies, probably from various nations, not just the Jewish nation, but perhaps even influenced by the Jews. But one of the major things that they looked to was the stars. That's why they're not really scientists in the true sense, because we know that stars, or do we know, but we probably know that stars don't tell us the future. But in those days, pondering upon the stars, gazing up at the stars, they believed that there would be signs that they could interpret to tell them what was happening. We have our own stargazer amongst us, and Paul McKaysey has sent me a couple of pictures that he's taken recently from his telescope. So I thought you might want to do a little bit of stargazing yourself. Not that we're going to see any future plans or prophecy in these stars, but these are actually taken by our very own Paul McKaysey. I'm not even going to comment on these, Paul, because I'll get it all wrong, but these are out of your telescope, aren't they? Can you see them? Hey, Paul can't hear me. These are your pictures, Paul. Up here. Is there one more? I mean, aren't they beautiful? Aren't they? And just amazing that I just can't get my head around this, that these pictures were taken from a telescope in Eastleigh. I find that absolutely amazing, and the fact that we can look at these. But not only that, we have our own very wise man, sitting amongst us. We can now call him Paul Magi Mackenzie. Paul looks at the stars, I think. I don't think he's kind of looking for prophecy and all those kind of things, but if he is, we'll need to talk later. Because they're beautiful. In fact, actually, when I saw the list of songs, I thought, where has Simon gone, actually? Oh, there you are. Why has Simon chosen that song? Which song was it early on? It's Falling from the Clouds. But as we sang it, I suddenly realised why you had chosen that. Actually, the skies sing the praises of God. They speak of something of God. And these magi would look up at the stars, and they're searching for truth. They're seekers for truth. Now, you and I may say, well, there's no truth in the stars. They're just stars. And yet something deep inside their hearts and their minds is that they want to know the truth. They want to know and understand the things that are taking place, that they might be in the truth. And here I find something quite remarkable, amazing. That God, in his wonder and in his grace, somehow compensates for those who look for truth in the wrong places, although actually you may say they looked in the right place in this case. We'll get to that in a minute. But those who might look for truth in the wrong place but have a heart for truth will discover truth. But actually, Jesus said it himself, didn't he? What did Jesus say? Put it over the page here. He said, ask and it will be given to you. Seek and you will find. Knock on the door and it will be opened to you. I'm not sure what kind of truth they were looking for. Perhaps they didn't even know what kind of truth they were looking for, but they were searchers of truth. And when this star, and it actually doesn't say a new star, do note that, but when this star appears, this difference in the constellation, something changes. There is something in these gentlemen, I assume they're all men, that makes them think God is doing something. Maybe it's some of the prophecies of old that speak of a star rising. Perhaps even maybe it goes back to, and we'll throw this one up, to Numbers 24, verse 17, of a prophecy of Balaam of all people. It's the fourth prophecy of Balaam to Balak that says this, I see him, but not now. I behold him, but not near. A star will come out of Jacob. A scepter will rise out of Israel. Maybe even they went back to that old, old prophecy of many, many years before them. And suddenly saw something in the skies that was different and said, something is taking place. And therefore we must follow to discover what this truth might be and who it is. It's easy for us to kind of reject, as kind of contemporary scientists and even conservative evangelicals, to reject those that seek truth, but never reject those people. Even if they're going down the wrong path, if their hearts are really seeking truth, I believe God will lead them and guide them as he did this very mysterious strangers that came to the feet of Jesus. And what about you? Are you seeking truth today? What about your journey? Is your journey full of desire for truth? None of us, not one in this room, actually, even if we took all that we knew in this room and managed to merge it into one brain, it would still not hold the full truth. Are we still people that are longing and yearning to know God's truth for our lives? I pray and hope that this Christmas time that we are, that we'll be like the Magi and say, teach us, show us what truth is. Third thing that they did is that they went on an adventure of faith. Now, at this point, I want to suggest that this idea that these were wise men may not really be the case. See, if I was a wise man and saw a star in the sky and thought this star may be significant, I would actually probably, in my great wisdom, decide not to follow the star. Because there are a number of things that I don't know. I don't know where the star is going to take me. I don't know how long it's going to take me. I don't know how much it's going to cost me. And I don't know who I'm going to end up seeing. And if this is a star, can I suggest, of a new king, and even if I could work out that it was hanging over Israel at the time, how stupid would I be to then walk into the palace of Herod and declare that I had seen a star of a new king, of someone that will rule over and above Herod himself? I think these wise men were stupid. That's what I think. I think they were daft. I don't think they thought it through. But they were adventures of faith. They saw enough. I don't think they had wisdom. I think they had faith. I think we should call them the three, well, actually not even three, the faithful magi, not the wise men. The faithful magi. There was just enough, an inkling, actually, I think, what's his name? One of the current songwriters, Tim Hughes, writes a song, A Pocket Full of Faith. There's a little song called A Pocket Full of Faith. Some of you may know it. I like that kind of illustration. Just you know when you've got a little pocket, well, actually, not a pocket full, just maybe a bit of dust in the bottom of your pocket. Just a little speck or two of faith is enough. Just what Jesus said, wasn't it? Faith as small as a mustard seed can move mountains. And I believe that the faith of these wise men was just a small amount of faith, believing that this star might mean something. And so they go on an adventure. Let me just throw up a map of possibly, the journey of which they went. I mean, it's almost, they definitely, the top end would have done, definitely. Where they came from, well, probably somewhere over there in Iraq or Iran or somewhere down the bottom there. Well, now let me just throw up another adventure of faith that you may recognize. This was the one of Abraham. Abraham started in Ur, down there in the bottom of Babylonia. And if if I'm right in terms of what I think they came from almost where Abraham came from, which would be very, very interesting. And the only journey to get from there, and it's about 400 miles to Israel as the bird flies, or 500, you've got to go north up through the Fertile Crescent, over around the top, and then back down. That's where the trade routes went. And so they just began their journey. And I just find it fascinating that their journey was very similar to another character who we know full well went on an adventure of faith, where God said, move. He didn't know where, he didn't know when, didn't know where he was going to end up, and yet he stepped out in faith. Which brings us back to 2016, doesn't it? About this time, just coming to the end of that series which we did on Abraham. And we were encouraged by the Spirit of God, I believe, and many of you have, and many of you still are, to step out on an adventure with God. You know, those who go to search for Jesus are on an amazing adventure. We don't know when, we don't know where, we don't know how much it's going to cost us, but what we do know, which they didn't know, is who. Who we follow. It is Jesus that we follow. And let me encourage you to continue that adventure with them, with God, as you continue to follow the direction of which he's calling you on. Step by step along the journey. It may be a long journey that you're going on. It may take a long time before you get there. It may cost you a lot, and I think it cost these guys a lot. And remember, these guys would have gone with a number of people as well. So don't go on your own. You know, maybe there was three, but if you go with Eastern tradition, it'd be 12. But there was certainly a harem, a whole group of people, a posse of people that would have gone with them with security and people that would protect them and so forth. Go with others in your adventure of faith to what God is calling you to. And finally, we discover these people, these magi, faithful magi, are pilgrims of worship. Let's just go back to the passage, Matthew 2. We saw his star when it rose and have come to worship him. And then verse 2, verse 11. On coming to the house, they saw the child and his mother, Mary. And they bowed down and worshipped him. Then they opened their gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. These influential people, who knew perhaps what it was to be in the courts of a king, maybe, who were wealthy, who had knowledge, who had great influence and power, probably, in the place of which they had journeyed from, arrive at the place in Bethlehem, the home of which Mary and Joseph and Jesus are now living, probably about 18 months, a year to 18 months after Jesus was born. And as they arrive there, I just picture this. There is this little, shame we can't bring one of the kids back in, actually. This little 18-month-old standing. And these great people, these great travelers, these wealthy, influential people bow before a child. I don't remember ever bowing to my child, although he nowadays would like me to. Not in that way. But in their culture, I mean, I actually, one or two parents do allow, you know, 18 toddlers to control their lives. That's a different sermon for a different day, perhaps. But in those days, the smallest child, the youngest child, was the servant of the family. They were the lowest in the hierarchical pattern of life. They were the lowest of the low. And actually, if they were a slave child, they would actually be washing the feet of people coming in as soon as they were able to use a towel and some water. That's where their position in life was, the lowest of the low. And yet these kings, no, they're not kings. Yet these wise men, no, they're not really wise. Yet these mysterious strangers, this magi, kneel and bow before Jesus, the child. What humility. What submission. What sacrifice. What sacrifice. Do we bow before Jesus? He's not a child anymore. He stands at the right hand of the Father, waiting for his Father to tell him when he will return. So we don't need to bow before the child, but we need to bow before Jesus. And Jesus said, you know, to come into the kingdom of God, you need to come as a child. You need to kind of strip yourself bare almost. You need to become like the magi who put aside everything that they are in the world, all their intellect, all their influence, all their power, even their wealth they put before Jesus, gold, myrrh, and frankincense. And they give it up to Jesus. Pilgrims of worship who love Jesus so much that they give of themselves. That is worship, people. Do you know, I sometimes wonder why we British people struggle so much to put our hands in the air in worship to Jesus. Is that so difficult? There's some people say to me, oh, don't tell me to put my hands in the air as a pastor. I'm leaving soon so I can say what I want. You can sack me tomorrow if you want. I'll just have an easy Christmas. If we can't put our hands in the air, say Jesus. I mean, you don't have to put your hands in the air. I'm not saying you have to. But if it's something that physically we find difficult, if Jesus said, look, Put your hands in the air to me. Would we put our hands in? If Jesus came and said, I want you to put your hands in the air for my glory, would we do it for Jesus? Would we do that? Because if we can't put our hands in the air, if we can't get our hands out of the pockets and put our hands in the air, how can we put our hearts on the table for Jesus? Do you understand what I'm saying? Your hands in pockets, let's be metaphorical now, okay, not rather than literal, but hands in pockets worship is not good enough. That's distant worship. The Magi put it all before Jesus. Hands out and everything before Jesus. That is sacrificial, submissive, humble worship before God. They found the living Lord, the creator of the universe, and they bowed before him and they worshipped him. Pilgrims, come worship Jesus. Worship him with your lives. Worship him with your money. Worship him with everything that you got. Come bow before Jesus and declare him as Lord of your life. Amen.